Har du et enkeltpersonforetak eller en liten bedrift? Da du sikkert lei av å høre meg snakke om hvor enkelt det med kvitteringer og bilag i fiken. Så vi gir oss her, fordi vi liker enkelt. Fiken. Superenkelt regnskap.
Nyt sommerferien på Prime.
I'm here to show you a wonderful place.
Opplev spennende turer.
Så kan dette bli veldig farlig.
Finn sommerkjærligheten.
You're like a Coachella.
Hi.
Hi.
Se på Fallout, Furia eller The Idea of You.
Okidoki.
Og gjør deg klar for en sommer full av eventyr. Bare på Prime. Krever abonnement på Prime Video.
Det enkelt nok for kundene dine å betale? Med betalingsløsninger fra Svea kan du tilby samme fleksible løsning på nett og i fysisk butikk. Svea. Vår jobb. Din betalingsløsning. Enklere. Raskere.
Hello and welcome to the first Parla Inglese in several months, maybe even more than a year. With me today, I have former Northern Ireland international, former Raufoss and Blackburn striker, current and seemingly eternal manager of Glenavon FC, Gary Hamilton. Welcome, Gary.
Thank you so much. Thanks for inviting me on.
Oh, thanks for joining. We'll get back into why you're here in just a few moments. But when I say eternal manager of Glenavon, I mean, you're on your way to become the second longest serving manager of the club.
Yeah, I think that's correct. As I say, it's a club that's close to my heart. My two uncles played for the club, and I followed them from as a young boy, you know, from 6 years of age. So I've grew up supporting the club, and, you know, it's something that I've always wanted to do. I've always wanted to be a part of the club. Unfortunately, whenever I come home from Raufoss that time, unfortunately, at the time, the club didn't want me as a player, and I ended up signing for their rivals, believe it or not. Mm-hmm. And that was just part and parcel as a professional footballer. I had to take what I had on offer at the time. And, you know, thankfully, towards the end of my career, I got to go for a year on loan from Glentoran, an experience playing for my boyhood team. And then from off the back of that, then the job come up and I went for it. And thankfully, I got it. And, you know, I've been there now 10 years in December there. So it's been a long time, but it's been a very enjoyable time. And I think it always means more to you whenever it's a club close to your heart and it's a team you've grew up and followed. And, you know, my dream as a young boy, you know, lots of kids over here support Man United and Rangers and Celtic and Liverpool. You know, for me, my main team was Glenavon, and because of my uncles playing for them and my granddad following them, my family following them, you know, probably a bit like yourself with your club, you know, it was my club, and, you know, my dream was to win a trophy playing for them, and thankfully I was able to do it as a player manager twice. So, you know, that's meant a lot to me. It's meant a lot to my family and my late granddad, God bless his soul, you know, managed to be able to stay alive to see me do that twice. And, you know, it's a memory that I'll never forget, and something that he'll be able to take to his grave with him. And, you know, hopefully he's still looking down on me now and seeing that I'm still at Glenavon doing as good as I can.
Yeah, I mean, I was there a couple of weeks ago seeing your team beating Portadown in the Mid-Ulster Derby. And, I mean, your family couldn't have been more proud than that day, because everything went for you.
Yeah, we were excellent first half, especially. You know, first half it could have been 5 or 6. I think we took our foot off the pedal a bit in the second half, but, you know, it was a good atmosphere, good match, and as I say, you know, obviously a lot of my family members were there, and, you know, obviously from growing up supporting the club, a lot of my friends are there as well, you know, that support the club as well, that I grew up and stood in the terraces with as a young boy. So, you know, that means a lot to me as well. It's other people, you know, you're having a big impact on their lives as well, in terms of if you get results in them matches, because as every football supporter knows in the world, you know, derby matches are massive, and they want to go away with the bragging rights, and thankfully We did.
You sure did. Well, Glenavon is a football club from Lurgan, a town in Northern Ireland. And I guess you're from the outskirts of town. I mean, you're pretty much a native. Yeah. So this is your local boyhood club that you supported. When I was in Northern Ireland, I was talking to a few people that I think it's kind of similar to what we're experiencing in Norway, is that the competition from especially the Premier League is so vast, and so that it really takes a certain kind of, I guess, kind of spiritual connection to actually focus on your, you know, usually lower quality local team. What was it that made Glenavon so special for you growing up?
It was just literally for me, it was a team that I went to watch every Saturday, and you know, it was a family day out. My daddy and my brother and me and my uncles all went to watch Glenavon, and we followed them home and away everywhere. So, you know, I know from playing in Norway, there's a lot of traveling when you're going to away games, but you know, in Northern Ireland, you can get from one side of it to the other, and probably the furthest game that we have to travel to is probably 1 hour 30 minutes, you know. So it's not a long journey. So, you know, you make a day of it, and you know, it's something I always remembered, and it's something that I enjoyed doing. And you know, even whenever I used to come back from Blackburn or Rufus or any clubs that I played with across the water, you know, the first thing I would have always done was go and watch Glenavon again, you know, because it was something that I enjoyed. And you know, people may say it's lower quality, and listen, I'm not going to argue with that. But certainly for me, it was football, and it was people that were going out. They weren't earning a lot of money. They were giving their all. And, you know, there was no prima donnas. You know, there was people that were going and putting a good shift in and trying their best. And, you know, some of the matches, you know, you watch matches in England and everything else, and you see people diving about all over the shop and things like that. And, you know, I just thought this league's a very, very honest league, and people that are going to work during the day, and then, you know, at night times, you know, they're training and then going and competing on a Saturday. The big thing in this league now over the last few years, which has strengthened it, is there's 4 full-time teams in it now, which was never the case growing up, you know. So that's made a massive improvement, and you're seeing better players coming across from Scotland and England. And, you know, one's just signed for Glentoran a day from America as well. He's played in the MLS. So, you know, you're starting to attract a better quality player. And, you know, okay, that makes it difficult for us part-time teams, like ourselves. But, you know, for me, it's all about the league and raising the profile of the league. And certainly a lot of players have moved over the last 5-6 years over to England and had successful careers, ended up becoming Northern Ireland internationals and being players that have been part of the squads for year in, year out. And, you know, the best example probably of that would be Stuart Dallas. You know, Stuart Dallas moved from Crusaders, went across to England and Brentford, and then he's playing for Leeds in the Premier League week in, week out now, and he's probably one of Leeds' best players. But, you know, he learned his trade in the Irish League and played in the Irish League until he was 20.
Yeah, that's definitely something that we saw when we were there, is that it's just getting better, Northern Irish football in general, as we can see also from the national team actually making it into international competitions now. But you said there are 4 professional clubs in the league now?
Yeah, 4. There's Larne, there's Glentoran, there's Linfield, and there's Crusaders, you know. So they've all went down a full-time model. And, you know, again, it's improved the standard of the league. It's brought in more professionalism in the league as well. And, you know, as I said, it does make it harder for clubs like ourselves who are part-time and our players are working. And, you know, especially in midweek games, if you meet them on a Tuesday night, because them players are rested up and recovering properly, where our boys are playing a match on a Saturday and then going into work on a Monday, going into work on a Tuesday, and then coming to play a match straight from work. And sometimes the players struggle to get food before the game. It's literally that tough for them, you know, depending on what job they are, where they're doing the job. And, you know, they're not going into the game proper. You know, you prefer to play the bigger teams on a Saturday, you know, when boys get finished their week of work on a Friday, yeah, get a good night's sleep, get up on a Saturday morning, prepare properly, and then obviously take part in the game. It gives you a better chance. But, you know, certainly in midweek games, it does make it harder for the part-time teams.
How do you, as a part-time team, cope with that difference? I mean, you are playing, you have played quite a few matches in just a couple of weeks now. It seems to be a lot of midweek games, high intensity, of course, in every match because of this is Ireland. How do these players survive, and how do you stay competitive?
It's really difficult. There's no point in me lying in that, you know. But you know, I've got honest boys. But you know, I think if you look at the, if you would look at the statistics, you know, in terms of the matches that the full time teams play against the part time teams in midweek matches, especially, you know, it would be a high loss percentage or a high not winning percentage. You know, the percentage of wins would usually go to the full time teams in their matches, and then it is an advantage. But you know, it is what it is. And if you want the league to get better and improve, then we need this. We need the full time teams. And if that means the rest of us suffering, then so be it. But you know, for our players, it's really, really difficult, both mentally and physically, you know, because they're going in and they maybe have a tough day at work. Anybody at work knows that. You can have a bad day at work, and then all of a sudden you're finding yourself on a football field that night trying to win a match for your supporters, and people don't understand that, that the players are going into work and maybe having a bad day at work where things haven't went right, they're stressed, and then they're going straight from that. Like at 5 o'clock, we meet at 6:15. So most of them are leaving straight away from their work to come straight down to the pitch and play a match and get prepared for a match. And, you know, they're maybe not in the mental state. And, you know, at that stage, it's too last minute for me to change teams or change team selections, you know. So they just get on with it and they just play, you know, and hope that they get through it. But, you know, that's one thing about them, you know, you can't fault their commitment. And, you know, that's why I always, you know, when supporters over here are critical of players, it sort of gets to me, because you know they're giving their all and they're trying to combine two jobs and they're trying to go out on a Saturday or a Tuesday and perform and get supporters results. And you know, maybe in England and countries where it's full time properly, you know, they can demand a little bit more of the players because they're getting the proper rest, they're getting the proper training, they're getting the proper recovery, they're getting the proper foods, sport and nutrition, you know, everything is set on a plate for them, so they don't have any excuses really not to perform, you know, whereas these players here have got their jobs to contend with, then their football, then their family life, you know, they've got so many influences in their life, and you know, they're still going out and putting in performances as best they can.
So speaking of the supporters, have you seen a rise in the popularity of the local football now that it's getting better quality-wise with the professionalism and all that?
Yeah, of course. Yeah, it's been a big improvement in supporters. You know, I'm back in the league 20 years now in terms of playing and managing. And, you know, this has been the best period the last couple of years, maybe 2 to 3 years has been the best period I've seen in my time back in terms of supporters. You always obviously got your good crowds in your derby matches. That's always been a situation here, but you know, with every match now, with the bigger clubs, the Linfields, the Lorns, the Crusaders, obviously the Coleraine's up there at the top, Clippenville's are up there at the top at the minute, you know, they're getting vastly improved crowds, which is great to see again. You know, it's great to see, and you want to see more of it. You know, there's nothing better even for us players going to places like that and performing against teams like that with good atmospheres. And, you know, that's what you want, you know, as a footballer, you want to go out and perform in front of crowds and get a good atmosphere and hopefully then win the game and come off the pitch with a good win. But, you know, it's been brilliant. It's a league that I have a lot of time for. It's something that I have a lot of respect for, and I'm just so glad to see that it's finally moving in the right direction and it's getting better and better year in, year out, and we're now seeing our teams competing in Europe. I'm not saying we've got the Europa League or anything yet or group stages or anything like that, but you're seeing our teams going through rounds now or getting through two rounds, and you know, it's starting to get improvements that side as well.
Yeah, and that's probably the biggest or the clearest sign that things are moving in the right direction, because it's not too long ago that I mean, I'm from Norway. I'm used to relatively shitty football from my club especially, but also our competitors. And just a few years ago, anyone getting drawn against a Northern Irish team would just say, oh, it's a walkover for the Norwegian team. And yeah. Then you guys had a visit from Molde. And yeah, it surely was no walkover, was it?
No, and to be fair, obviously Ole Gunnar Solskjaer was the manager that night, and you know, it was great for our players because a lot of them are Man United fans, and for to have Ole there, it was a great occasion for them. And But that night, and I mean it, if I could send you the footage of the game, you know, we were deserving winners. We were very, very good that night. And, you know, a certain player called Hallam played that night. And, you know, we all know who he is and how good a player he is. And, you know, literally our two centre-backs that night didn't give him a kick, and he ended up getting moved out to the right wing, you know. And, you know, it was just such an amazing performance from our players on the night. And, you know, I think they might be coming in underestimated us a little bit, but at the same time, we were very, very good. And, you know, after the game, to be fair to Ollie, and that's one thing I'll always stick with me in football. He was such an honest loser. You know, he turned around and he said we deserved to win the game, you know. And to be fair, even when we went back out there, that we went down 3-1 at the stage, and at that stage there was the way goals could count, and we got in the box and we should have had a penalty and we didn't get it. And you know, I think that was about the 81st minute, and obviously at that stage we needed to get the next goal, and obviously if we didn't get it we were out. But if we'd have got that penalty, who knows? But obviously after that we obviously went to 3 at the back to try and chase that goal, and they ended up coming out 5-1 winners. And you know, but it was such a great experience for the players, and as I said, you know, we certainly gave them a run for their money on the both nights.
Definitely. And for that, just for beating them that once, I thank you from the bottom of my heart. But this is not the first time you've been to Norway, Gary.
Yeah. I was in Raufoss.
You were.
2001.
Yeah. How did that happen?
Well, listen, at the time it was, I was at Blackburn at the time, and Stigninger Bjørneby and Henningberg were both there. Both of them played at the time for the club. And at the time they respected me as a footballer, and they'd seen me, I'd been up training with the first team and things like that, and they'd obviously seen that I'd been released due to an injury, and I just got back fit near the end of my contract. And it actually come about in a funny circumstance, because first of all, Stigninger Bjørneby asked me to go over to Kongsvinger, so I went over to Kongsvinger first, and I played in a match for Kongsvinger, a pre-season game against a team in the senior league, or the top league in Norway, and we beat them 2-1 and I scored 2. So, you know, they obviously offered me a contract, and then whenever I got back, we were having a night out as a goodbye with everybody, all the first team players and all. It was an end of season night out, and you know, I ended up sitting with Henning, who I'd always got on really well with at the football club. You know, me and Henning had always, he'd always looked after me as a young player, and he always would have talked to me and give me advice. And he said, I hear you're out at Kongsvinger. He says, I've got a club called Raufoss that I think he has a bit of a share in it at the time or something like that. And he says, we did not go out to my club. And at the time, I obviously got on really well with Henning. And because I'd been out to Kongsvinger and I enjoyed my week there, I thought to myself, well, Henning and me have known each other longer, so I'll love Norway. I'll go out to Raufoss. And you know, I went out there and I thoroughly enjoyed my time there. I really, really did. And probably one of my biggest regrets in football is that I didn't take the contract that they offered me, and I come back home, because at the time I come back home under a false promise that never materialized. I thought it was happening. And whenever I got back home, the contract wasn't on the table. And then by the time I contacted Raufoss back to say I would come back, they had obviously offered another striker the contract, and it always is something that stuck with me. It's always something that, to be honest with you, it's like unfinished business type thing, and it's something that it is a country that I loved, and it is a country that I would always like that I went back to, because I made a mistake and I didn't make the right decision at that time. And as I said, at the time I really, really had a lovely time there. The people were lovely to me, they were great, and as I said, I thoroughly enjoyed living in Norway, and as I said, I thoroughly enjoyed playing in the Norwegian league, and although it wasn't a top league, it was a league below, and you know, I managed to score, I think it was 4 or 5 goals. I scored a couple in the league, you know, and I scored 2 or 3 in the cup. And you know, one of my best experiences was as a young boy growing up, when you used to watch Match of the Day, a player that always stood out to me and stuck out to me was Jan-Inger Fjartoft, who used to do the famous celebration when he scored goals for Swindon. And in one of the cup games when we played one of the Premier League sides, I can't remember the name of the team that he played for at that time, but we went and he was playing, and it was always like, it was like a dream come true for me, because I grew up watching him, and he always stood out to me because of his goal celebrations and the amount of goals he scored for Swindon. And I ended up being on the same pitch as him when I went to Norway, and it was a a great experience and a great feeling for me.
Well, sounds like you thoroughly enjoyed your time. And you say that it was a mistake not extending your stay, but I see that you went back home first to play for Portadown and then for Glentoran. And it seems to be the next 10 years after coming home would be the best footballing days of your career.
Yeah, listen, yes, yes. To be fair, you know, as much as it was Glenavon's rivals and, you know, a team that I hadn't much time for growing up, I went to Portadown and I thoroughly enjoyed my time there. You know, they gave me an opportunity and I ended up scoring a lot of goals there, scored over 100 goals there. And I ended up getting my first international cap while I was there, you know. So, you know, I have a lot to thank them for as well at the same time. And, you know, I'd done really well there in my time at Portadown. Then I moved on to Glentoran as well and I had a really successful time there and scored a lot of goals there, again, over 100 goals there as well. And again, I got more international recognition there. Like, I know I only ended up playing 5 times for Northern Ireland, but I think I was probably involved in about 20, 25 squads. So, you know, those experiences, you know, I always, when I was growing up, my ambitions as a young boy growing up was always to play for Glenavon and win something with Glenavon and to play for my country. And, you know, I've been lucky enough to be able to say that I've done both of them. And, you know, the other one that I wanted to do was obviously make it as a professional footballer in England. You know, I did it to a certain degree, but I didn't completely fulfill that ambition. But as I say, I wouldn't swap anything for the world because, you know, I've managed to get 2 of my ambitions out of the 3 and 2 out of 3 ain't bad.
Definitely not. So I promised that we would get to why we decided to make this podcast because, I mean, I went to Northern Ireland, to Belfast, on a Friday. I caught the Bell Classico at the Oval between Glentoran and Linfield, which was a great experience, by the way. Two clubs in the country, right?
Yeah, it's amazing. And listen, I've been lucky enough myself to play in many of them in my time at Glentoran. And, you know, it is an amazing experience. And, you know, in my time, whenever there wasn't as much crowd restrictions, you know, you would have been getting 11,000-12,000 at them games, you know, which is good crowds, you know. And, you know, it was a hostile environment, as you probably witnessed yourself and experienced yourself. And there's a lot of hatred there, you know, and they despise each other. And, you know, but it was, as a footballer again, It was one of the best games you could play in, and it's something that'll always stay with you the rest of your life. And I'm sure you were glad you got to experience that yourself too.
Oh, absolutely. And even with the restrictions, you had about 6,000 people in the stadium, I think.
That was restricted. But Glentoran, I know the assistant manager, Glentoran used to be the assistant manager at Glenavon with me, and he was telling me that they could have sold out the whole ground themselves. Mm. You know what I mean? But if they had done that, then when they went to Windsor, then they mightn't have got an allocation of tickets. So they didn't want to do that and not have their own fans at Windsor or at the National Stadium as well. So, you know, Glentoran had a demand, I think, of 7,000 people for tickets for that match alone. So you can tell how big a supportive club, and the same with Linfield, they're massive. And if they got the cup final, there's no doubt they would fill 20,000 easy.
That's beautiful. So that was a great Friday night for us, despite the rain and the wind. And then waking up slightly hungover on a Saturday, getting the train to Lurgan, making our way slowly out to Mournview Park, where I knew it was a derby, but I didn't really expect much. I had read somewhere that the stadium took 3,000 and it was expected 800 people, which was way off.
Yeah,
it must have been more like 4,000 than 800. but we went to a pub, you probably know it, the Courthouse Bar, I think it was, beforehand. And we just stumbled across the Victoria fan club on Facebook, and I just messaged them, not expecting an answer back. And it took about 3 minutes before they said, "You're more than welcome to join us in our clubhouse," I guess they call it, which is in the stadium.
Yeah.
So we make our way there, and we get to the turnstiles, getting ready to show our tickets, and the guy just asks, "Are you the Norwegians?" So we didn't really have to show our tickets. we were expected already, and we just got the warmest of welcomes. Sadly, that included a taste of what they called Lurgan's Finest.
Yeah.
Which is...
Lurgan's Champagne.
Yeah, well, there's nothing champagne about it, is it? What I'm talking about is, of course, the Buckfast, or the Bucky, as the locals call it. What is a Buckfast?
It's like a tonic wine, and believe it or not, I think it originates from the monks. The monks made it and designed it, and you know, it's a tonic wine, but it's a lot of caffeine in it. It's a lot of caffeine, and if you manage to drink a bottle of that, you'll certainly be flying all night, so you will. And unfortunately, the come down off it the next day is even worse.
Yeah, I had to come down even the same evening, but but they had beers too. So you know, the it sneaks up on you is the problem, because it's not really strong. It's only about 5% or something. I think 5-7%.
No, Buckfast 14%.
Oh shit! Okay. Well, it still sneaks up on you. Anyway, we go into the stands, having received free scarves and, you know, great hospitality from the lads, and then your team just blow away the opposition, the dreaded Portadown. Especially remembering the chant, "Ports are going down like a Russian submarine." Which, well, I guess it was an omen for things to come. But great crack in the stands. We head back for a pint at halftime and get back out. And we could tell your boys aren't as aggressive as they were in the first half. And we could also tell that not everyone from the clubhouse went back to the stands. So after, I guess, 15 minutes or something, we just head back inside and we stay there. And then, long story short, we meet with you in the press zone just after the match. You invite us to the actual bar in the stadium. Of course, there's a pub in the stadium, right?
Yeah, there's four, five. Yeah.
It's not even that big of a stadium.
Yeah, there's five bars.
Well, it's just... you know, space efficiency.
Yeah.
Very well planned.
They're all head under the stands.
good architects. So we head inside and there is a full bar. And I remember you coming over and you took me to the actual bar. You went under it and inside and you just pour yourself two pints for me and my friend Trim. Which is, you know, not something you expect from a top flight manager anywhere in the world.
Now, listen, as I said, it's a family club, and you know, I'm sure you knew that when you were there and experienced that. You know, I played for a lot of clubs in my time, but you know, in terms of family clubs and at the Gallernes, it's unbelievable. You have to experience it to believe it. And that's the way it is, you know, like if I had to work a shift in the bar, I'd work a shift in the bar. It's just the way it is, you know, and, you know, everybody does everything to help the club as best they can. And, you know, sometimes when you get a bar as busy as it was that night and the two girls are getting a tough ask, then there's nothing wrong with me going in and helping out and pulling a couple of pints or getting a couple of bottles of beer, you know, and that's just the way it is, you know, and the directors maybe jump in behind the bar time or whatever, you know, it's just, there's a lot of people that doing it voluntarily. So, you know, that's what I like about the club, you know, it's, you know, and as I always say, you're never too big or better than anybody else to do anything else. So, you know, I think you have to be grounded at times and play your part to help the club too. And I wasn't going in to do it, you know, cheekiness. I do that quite regularly, you know, to help out.
Mm. And of course, there was live music. It was a good crowd, good atmosphere, of course, after the derby win. So the Buckies kept coming. And I seem to recall I'm quite a large guy. My friend is even bigger. I seem to recall some dancing or attempted dancing, which is very out of character for the both of us.
That's Buckfast.
It is Buckfast.
Buckfast makes you do many wonderful things.
Yeah. And the funny part is that, I mean, the match, I think, was at 3 in the afternoon. So it's probably not even 9 when I'm disemboweling myself in the parking lot outside the stadium, because I just couldn't handle the bucky or the sheer amounts of bucky at all. Because, I mean, the alcohol level was higher than I anticipated, but there's a lot of other stuff in there as well.
Yeah, but it is a caffeine. It's a caffeine is the biggest thing. It's such a there's a lot of caffeine and a lot of sugar, a lot of sugar, and that's how you get the buzz and the high. But then, unfortunately, whenever the Buckfast starts wearing out of your system, you get an awful low off it as well. Mm-hmm. And I thankfully I only ever drunk it the once in my life, and I've never drunk it again since. So, and I don't plan to, but I know certainly the people that I know drink it. It happens to them quite regularly, and I ask them why they drink it every week.
Yeah, I read an article. I think it was The Guardian, which called it a drink with almost supernatural powers of destruction. And I can clearly relate. But even with the crumbling come down, in my case, it was an amazing night and an amazing experience. So thank you for that, Gary. And I do have a couple more questions about the Northern Irish League and the Northern Irish identity, I think is the right word, because I couldn't help getting confused while being in both Belfast and Lurgan. Yeah. First of all, when I went to the Bell Classico, the Glentoran fans, I mean, they were winning 1-0, going top of the table, and they were singing about winning the Irish League. Yeah. And looking at Glenavon's Wikipedia, it says having won the Irish Cup a couple of times during your reign, by the way. And for me, or in Norway, we call the two countries. We don't say the Republic of Ireland or Irish Republic. We say Ireland and Northern Ireland.
Yeah.
So I was quite surprised to say that it was just Irish. And we all know about the troubles in the past. We're not going to go into that, but can you explain to me what is a Northern Irish person? I mean, you have the ones who are loyal to what is the British crown, and you have the ones who want to be part of the Republic, but you're all Irish still, right?
Yeah. Technically, we're all Irish because we live in Northern Ireland or Republic of Ireland. So technically, we're all Irish. But a lot of people in the north of Ireland, you're either usually a Catholic or a Protestant. And, you know, the Catholic people, we classify them ourselves as Irish, whereas the Protestant people would classify themselves as Northern Irish or British, you know, and that's just the way it is, obviously, since the days of the Troubles, you know, back Ireland used to be one, and then obviously there was the Troubles, and you know, it ended up splitting the two, which was Northern Ireland and Republic of Ireland. But since that's just been the way it's been. But you know, thankfully, in the last sort of 15-20 years, you know, there's been a peace process. We haven't seen as much trouble, but certainly through ancestry and just through generations, people still see themselves as one or the other, you know. But thankfully, you know, through sport, you know, the generations mix a lot more now than what we would have done back in our day, you know. And you know, it's great to see that through sport that a Catholic young child and a Protestant young child can be best friends, you know, because a lot of it over here at schools, it starts at school. They usually go to a Catholic school or a Protestant school. So they usually end up just having one side of the religion that they knock about with, they go to school with, they're friendly with. But thankfully, due to sport and football, then at night times they maybe go and mix with a Protestant kid if they're Catholic or vice versa, you know. And it's something that I've always been very, very, very thankful for, you know, because, you know, a lot of my best friends growing up through football have been Catholics, you know, and I grew up in that situation, and it's down to my love of football and down to playing football, and And as I say, there's no difference in anybody. You know, we're all the same. And, you know, I think if there was more and more people the same as most football people, the country would be even better again. It's improved a hell of a lot over the last few years, but certainly we can still improve even more. And hopefully in the next 15, 20, 30 years, we see another massive improvement. And hopefully there won't be the talk of the religion that there usually is.
So it sounds like both in terms of sporting quality and I guess unity in sports or society, things are really going in the right direction, which is great to hear. And that was also the impression I had being there, is that people weren't talking about them and us in the same way as one might expect that they would have 20 years ago, for example.
And that's the way it was. You know, that was the way it was back in the day whenever I was growing up, in the time of the Troubles and everything else. You know, that's the way everybody was. They weren't educated probably any different. You know what I mean? That was just the way we were brought up as kids. But thankfully, my family was never like that. But, you know, certainly, you know, in predominantly Protestant areas or predominantly Catholic areas, kids were brought up that way. And it was probably not so much to hate the other people, but to dislike, you know what I mean? And thankfully, since the peace process, and there's been a lot of good work done in society. And I keep going back to the one thing, the sport, you know, even through the Troubles, you know, the sport was a real big help with everybody, you know, because as I said, even in the Troubles days, you know, Catholics played with Protestants and Protestants played with Catholics. And, you know, it was something that brought people together, which was great to see.
And that's the beauty of it, football and sports in general, as a bridge that you can use to mend the gap. Even with kids being in different schools, they will still play together after school and actually be around each other and see each other as full full people. But I think that's a good segue to my next question is. Where do you see the football in Northern Ireland going? Will you see an increase in professionalized clubs anytime soon? Will the national team keep improving and getting into international competitions?
Well, we'll hope so. You know, certainly the league, if we start with that, personally, you're just hoping that there's more investment comes into the league. There's been a lot of investment come into the league. The guy who owns Glentoran's an Iranian. And obviously the guy that owns Lauren comes from Lauren itself, but has ended up becoming a very wealthy businessman, and he's wanted to put money back into his hometown, you know, and give them something back. And, you know, you hope that there's more people out there, you know, because I'm sure there's somebody from most towns in this country that went on and been successful in business or whatever else, and you hope that these people put back in eventually and maybe see other people doing it and maybe encourages them to help out their hometown team, and then maybe you could maybe see more full-time teams in the league and maybe end up getting that way eventually. But, you know, certainly at this minute in time, I can't see it, but, you know, we're just hoping that people see the league improving and maybe want to invest in it and maybe want to invest in clubs in this league like they've done in other leagues in the world. And that's for me the only way that it's going to move even more forward. But certainly the fact that we've got four now will certainly make it better and make it more competitive when we go and play in European competitions, you know, that we won't be turnovers, you know, and which we always used to be. And we don't want that for the league. And it's good to see that we haven't been that way over the last couple of years. And as far as international teams concerned, I thought they've been excellent over the last sort of 10 years, you know, under Michael O'Neill, there's some good times, you know, and they just missed out in, I think, the last one in a playoff match against Switzerland, which I thought they were robbed in. They got the Euros before that in Germany, and they've been doing well. The only thing is we've probably had a couple of key players like Aaron Hughes and people like that over the last couple of years retire. You know, Gareth McCauley's boys that were Premier League players in England that were big players for our national team. And, you know, we're probably going through a period now of transition, you know, where we're trying to get more players coming through again, that they get into that Premier League again and then maybe get ready to go again. And I think most countries go through the same thing, you know, in terms of, you know, you maybe get a batch of players that come through at a time and they go on to play in the Premier League in England or Spain or wherever, probably for yourselves in Norwegian terms. But for players from our country, they usually go to England or Scotland or, you know, and they usually make a career there. But the more players obviously you have playing in the highest leagues, the better you're going to do at international level. And, you know, there's no two ways about that. So hopefully we can keep continue to produce these younger players and keep producing these players that play in the Premier League in England. That'll only help the international team.
Well, I hope that's the way it goes, because I did see a lot of potential when I was there. Although through my Buckfast draped eyes. Finally, Gary, why should people come to Northern Ireland for a football trip, for a long weekend, for example?
Well, I think you know better than anybody. Northern Irish people and people in Ireland in general are friendly people, you know. And that's one thing I've always said, you know, when you come to Ireland, you'll always meet friendly people. You'll always meet people that want to help you, want to sit with you, want to have a crack with you, have a bit of banter with you. And you'll always get looked after, you know, people in Northern Ireland. That's the way we are, you know. We look after people, and that's just the way we're brought up, you know. And I'm not saying every other nation's not like that, but it's certainly something I've always found. You know, I've played in England and I haven't found it as friendly at times, and you know, that's just the way it is. But certainly no matter where I've been, whether I've been in Southern Ireland, whether I've been up with the northwest of Ireland, you know, everybody's the same. You know, everybody's welcome to you and on open arms to you. And you know, as I said, from the football side of things, you can get a good hard game where players are fully committed, don't pull out of tackles, and nowadays you can get entertaining football as well. You'll get good matches as well where you'll be entertained too, thankfully.
Yeah, well, that sounds about right. And I mean, the hospitable, nice people, you're an example of that. I remember being quite drunk and working up my nerve to ask you to maybe be on the podcast one day, and you said, "Yeah, let's give you my number," before I could even finish the question. So that's a good image of what we experienced that whole weekend. So to anyone listening, Northern Ireland, a very underestimated place to go for a bit of football. Gary, thanks for being here. I know you have to get going to pick up your kids from football practice. Will they be internationals as well?
Nah, I don't know about that. We'll wait and see. As I say, it's their career. They'll just get it on with themselves. I take very little to do with them. I just let them go and play themselves. But, you know, obviously as a father, you would love it. But, you know, I don't want to get involved with them. I don't want to put pressure on them. I want them to do it for themselves and find their own path and their own way in life.
Yeah. Well, sounds like a good attitude to the whole football parent thing, which can be difficult for some. Anyway, thanks a lot, Gary Hamilton, for being on the show. Best of luck for the rest of the season.
Listen, it's been a pleasure. I really mean that. And it was a pleasure meeting you and your mate. It was top class. And as I say, anytime you want to ever come back, you know, you're always welcome at Glenavon, and we'll look after you. I mean that. And as I say, I hope you're successful in your life and you go on and you do well. And if we never meet again, thanks. And it was a pleasure to meet you.
Well, thanks a lot, Gary. And thank you to whoever's still listening. This is the English version of my typically Norwegian podcast, Pyro og Pivo. If you'd like to follow us on Twitter or Instagram, it's Pyro Pivo Pod or Pyro Pivo Pod, both places. Thanks for listening. We do these English episodes every once in a while, so subscribe and you'll find it again sometime.
Er det enkelt nok for kundene dine å betale? Med betalingsløsninger fra Svea kan du tilby samme fleksible løsning på nett og I fysisk butikk. Svea. Vår jobb. Din betalingsløsning. Enklere. Raskere.